Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's been 3 years since Rupert Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal and just a few months since the Journal launched its Greater New York section. Greater New York wasn't created just to provide more local content. It was also a gauntlet to start a war with the New York Times. Did you see the Wall Street Journal ads around the city that say things like ahead of the Times and the Times demand it? Vanity Fair contributor Sarah Ellison's piece, Two Men in a Newsstand, details the battle between Murdoch and the publisher of The Times, Arthur Sulzberger Jr. Sarah Ellison is here now to talk about it. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Murdoch hasn't always had The Times so specifically in his crosshairs, has he?
Not so specifically, but he has had it in his sights. And one of the things that I write about is that the Wall Street Journal really gives him the weapon to go after The Times that he didn't really have before. So this is a perfect opportunity for him to really get it going.
You quote Andrew Neil, who edited Murdoch's Sunday Times in London, as saying that Murdoch sees the New York Times as, quote, a fat pig ready for the taking.
Yes.
What did he mean?
What he meant by that is that what Murdoch has sort of done in his career, throughout his career, is to take an established player with a somewhat monopolistic position, or at least a leading position in the market, and really try to position himself as the challenger to that. One of the interesting things about doing that in this case is that taking one of the most establishment newspapers in the country, the Wall Street Journal, and positioning it as an upstart is a very interesting sort of marketing twist. And yet that's what he's done to sort of rally the troops and put himself in the position where he can say to New York Times readers, this is something that you haven't been getting before. You should look elsewhere.
And listeners, we did a little first day review of the Journal's Greater New York section when it debuted. Now it's been a few months. Are you reading the Journal's Greater New York section? Have you stopped reading the Times for local news? They don't have the page one metro section anymore. They have the metro section, what they call now the New York section, buried in the back of the A. As a newsreader, what do you think about these two newspapers side by side if you actually read both? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Vanity Fair contributor Sarah Ellison, who has a new piece, Two Men and a Newsstand. And you report that by way of financial context, the Times company makes 1/15 the revenue of Murdoch's News Corp.
Right.
What does this mean for the journalism in these two vaunted newspapers?
You know, it's funny. I think that clearly what it does is it sets up by definition that the New York Times is more at risk financially for losing its staff and its wherewithal to be able to stand up against Murdoch's assault. But in fact, what we've seen on the ground is that Murdoch and Arthur Sulzberger have a very different idea of the kind of news that they want to bring people. And so I think that what we're going to see, in fact, what we've seen so far, is that not many readers actually have defected from the New York Times to the Wall Street Journal because of its new Greater New York section. Of course, it's very early days, but they might just be appealing to entirely different audiences.
When you say a different kind of news, I mean, I've kidded the Greater New York section on the air for having many, many articles, really excellent coverage of Christie's. Not the governor of New York, the auction house of governor of New Jersey. Lots of articles about everything you ever wanted to know about Christie's and Sotheby's. but how else would you describe what they're doing at Greater New York?
Well, I think that it's very un-Wall Street Journal-ish, in fact. If you look at the Wall Street Journal that used to exist before Murdoch, I mean, what they're doing is they have it's much less staid. They have a society page in Greater New York. They do just basic sort of fire reporting, water main break reporting. One of their stories was on that rats had infested the Upper East Side, that there was erosion on Hampton's beaches, and wondering how that was going to affect people's summer. I don't think, you know, I've spoken to editors there, and they say that they have some investigative stuff coming out this fall. But I just think that the overall mood of that newspaper is a much more kind of it wants to be more fun than the New York Times.
And have you seen the journalism in the Times affected by Murdoch putting it so squarely in its sights? You said the Times readership has not apparently declined.
Right.
So that's from a business, bottom line standpoint. Have they maintained by doing something different, by just doing everything the same? What would you say?
I mean, I would say that you see more Metro stories on the front page of the New York Times than you used to. I think that they're definitely making an effort to highlight the fact that they do cover New York. One of the things that they love to point out is that, in fact, they have, of course, have been covering New York for a long time, but things like the Spitzer scandal or David Paterson coverage, I mean, these are stories that they do and have been doing, and these aren't exactly unsexy stories. I mean, these are things that would appeal to every New York Post reader. So it's not like they haven't been doing the kind of coverage that would appeal to somebody like Rupert Murdoch.
Kathleen in Short Hills, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, thanks for your time. Love
sure.
your show.
Thank you.
This is very topical. My husband and I, we have very different interests when we read the paper. I love the Times. I've read it since I was in college. He's loved the Journal. And it used to be I could read the Journal, and if I could erase everything I read, he wouldn't even notice it because he would read opposite articles. And then over the past 2 years, he started finding that the Journal was not focused enough on business for his interest, for his career. And I started finding it more and more interesting. Hmm. And he finally decided to cancel his subscription to the Journal because it just was too fluffy from the hardcore business that he was used to.
This is exactly, it's so interesting to hear that because this is exactly the risk that Murdoch is taking trying to expand the coverage of the Wall Street Journal, which he has said which he has talked about wanting to do for the 3 years that he's owned the paper, that he wants to make it more of a broader read and doesn't want it to be just the sort of narrow business read that it used to be. Now, in doing that, he's, of course, going head-to-head with the New York Times, but he's also possibly and potentially abandoning the readers who were really looking for the deep, deep business coverage that used to be in the paper. And it sounds like your husband is one of those people.
100%. He dumped the Journal, and I wish he hadn't. I liked it, but it's so expensive. I'm like, fine, that's the time. And he picked up the Financial Times, the pink paper.
This is incredible that you're saying all these things because this is sort of exactly what they are worried about and what they're afraid of. Let me ask you, would you ever consider canceling your New York Times subscription
never.
To pick up the Wall Street Journal?
Well, honestly, never for me personally. But I miss the fluffy bits of the Journal.
Uh-huh, the fluffy bits. That's so interesting.
Now, would you call the Financial Times pink? Or would you call it orange?
I would call it salmon colored.
That's what they say, salmon colored.
I think people in business call it the pink paper.
Yeah. Kathleen, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. By the way, you said that the Times is holding its own circulation-wise relative to the Journal. I mean, they have been losing circulation, haven't they?
They have been losing circulation. And this is one of the other interesting points about this rivalry is when in the piece I spoke to Arthur Sulzberger, and he was very clear about the Times' ambition as not being the biggest circulation newspaper in the country, because it's not and it never has been. That used to be USA Today, and now it's the Wall Street Journal. He said he's focused on maintaining the 800,000 readers that have been Times subscribers for over 2 years. So you want your loyal readers, and you want what he wants is sort of the thought leaders, the people who are in power, to continue to read his newspaper. Of course, what he's setting up is the foil being the Wall Street Journal and USA Today and putting them in the same sort of category. In fact, his executive editor, Bill Keller, said that he thought that if anyone was losing market share to the Wall Street Journal, it was USA Today.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, I guess it's the Observer that's really orange, the New York Observer. So we've got the orange paper and we've got the pink paper.
It's radio. It's hard for us to express all
these
things.
We've got the Times and the Journal. And Vanity Fair contributor Sarah Ellison has a new article in Vanity Fair, Two Men and a Newsstand, detailing the battle between Rupert Murdoch and the publisher of the Times, Arthur Sulzberger. And you could have made it Rupert Murdoch versus Carlos Slim. the billionaire investor who's now kind of the money man behind saving the Times. You know, the Times could have gone out of business altogether, many people believed, before Carlos Slim swooped in with some, in effect, bailout money not that long ago, right?
Right. I mean, the Times went through a period a year or two ago in which it was really in dire straits. They suspended their dividend for all of their shareholders, and that meant most importantly and critically for the ownership of the company, the Sulzberger family, which could have decided then that all the dividend money that they had been receiving for years, drying that up was reason enough for them to look for somebody else who might want to own the paper. But then Carlos Slim, who is the richest man in the world, came in and offered the Times a $250 million loan at 14%, which is not exactly a generous loan term.
Yeah.
But in fact, that did help them stay afloat, and they're going to pay that back beginning in 2012.
I have credit cards that have better rates than
that. No kidding.
And how about Carlos Slim? Because wasn't it around the same time that Murdoch bought the Journal? And so do we see Carlos Slim's agenda, if any, for the New York Times?
You know, Carlos Slim, as far as I understand it, really is just a financial owner of the New York Times. He is not somebody he certainly isn't walking into the newsroom of the New York Times or calling up Bill Keller the way Rupert Murdoch is calling up Robert Thompson to talk about what's in the next day's paper. He doesn't have that kind of interest, I don't think. But, you know, we'll see.
Norman in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Norman, journal reader.
Yeah, I've been reading the Wall Street Journal for about 40 years, and at the beginning it was the best journalism anywhere. I heard this Wall Street Journal reporter say that he was a socialist, and as long as he followed the formula, he could write anything he wanted, and they would print it. And I didn't believe it, so I picked up a copy of the Journal. And the front page story was about welfare to work programs in California. And they started out by interviewing an actual woman who was on welfare in California and was required to take a job. She was a college graduate and a single mother. Then they interviewed her caseworker, and her caseworker's supervisor, and they went all the way up the chain to the head of the welfare department in California.
I have to get to the chase here because we're running out of time, but are you saying that under Rupert Murdoch, the Journal has become too liberal?
No. This is the old Wall Street Journal. They came to the conclusion that the welfare to work program in California wasn't working. More recently, they had a story about how these prisons were getting so expensive that the states had to release prisoners. And in that story, they didn't speak to a single prisoner.
I get you. Now I see where you're coming from. And Sarah, in fact, in your piece, Sulzberger alludes to the fact that the Wall Street Journal hasn't won any Pulitzers since it took over. So do you think the journalism is becoming degraded? And as Norman suggests, is it becoming more politically conservative as an agenda, like many people would think of Murdoch with Fox News?
Well, I think that people see signs of there being more of an agenda in the news pages than there were before Murdoch. And I think that is something that you can look at. Of course, it's always dangerous to look at one article as a one-off because a paper is full of lots of different kinds of stories and different kinds of coverage. But I will say that there are signs that there are fewer in-depth, long-term investigative stories in the newspaper today because that is just not the kind – when we talk about the kind of journalism that Rupert Murdoch likes to print and he likes to have in his newspapers, it's news breaking, it is sort of buzz generating kinds of stories, and investigative projects take months and months, and sometimes they're incredibly arcane and they're not the most popular stories that readers want to pick up with their morning coffee, but places like the New York Times think that those are important stories to uncover, and they continue to do them.
And to read more about why Sarah Ellison thinks that there may even be a scenario where the publications totally diverge and no longer even compete for the same audience, read her piece about the Journal and the Times in Vanity Fair called Two Men and a Newsstand. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.